Welcome to the Euro Auto Training Garage Spiel Podcast, brought to you by Bomb Tools Unlimited, the go-to guys for European and import special tools and diagnostics. Call Bomb Tools at 800-848-6657 for your special tools needs. And Stahlwilli Tools North America. Stahlwilli Tools are the factory hand tools for Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, Audi, and Volkswagen, as well as the Mercedes Formula One team, BMW and Ducati motorcycle teams, and many of the most demanding aerospace OEMs around the world. Call 800-695-2714 to find a Stahlwilli distributor near you. This is part one of our eight-part interview with Dennis Simonitis, the engineering editor of Road & Track magazine. In this episode, Dennis tells us a little about himself and talks about his early days at Road & Track magazine. Today we're talking with Dennis Simonitis, Road & Track's engineering editor. Dennis has been with Road & Track since the late 1970s, and even though his writing most often focuses on the technical aspects of auto technology, he writes on a broad range of topics. Dennis's Tech Tidbits column has long been my favorite, where Dennis really flexes his writing muscles and mixes humor with clear explanations of complex technical subjects. Dennis, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks, Gary. I'm delighted to be here.
Publishing has often been called the accidental profession. Was it accidental for you?
Yeah, I think particularly what we're in, special interest publishing. Because notice we get into it because we have that special interest. You know, we don't start off saying, oh, I think I'll have a journalistic career. You say, gee, I'm really nutty about cars. And then you find that, hey, I can make a living doing this. So indeed, yes, it was very much an accidental career for me.
So I'm going to look back on what I understand about your career. You began your studies in math at WPI in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And then went on to complete your PhD at Case Western in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm a native Clevelander.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, then you headed to the Virgin Islands.
That's right.
And you worked in the Virgin Islands for 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then inexplicably moved to Pittsburgh to work for the Society of Auto Engineers. So help me out. Why would someone trade nearly unlimited sunshine for a location that has less than 60 sunny days a year?
That's right. Well, I did. It didn't happen quite that simply, though. Let's see. The unlimited sunshine part. Yes. The College of the Virgin Islands was a really neat place. There's a good little story to tell. It was a fairly new school. And in fact, while I was there, we got our 4-year accreditation, where a bunch of people come down and look at the school and pass on your credentials. The people said, we went about our work with the zeal of a Midwestern religious school. And I thought that was so cool that we had that dedication. So, in fact, it was a cool place to work. Let's see, what's wrong with St. Thomas? It's isolated. Imagine Manhattan Island. In fact, put a big green sheet over Manhattan Island, and you know what St. Thomas looks like, as far as height, as far as length, width. So it's not a real big place. And yes, it's a nice place, but have this big, giant green sheet over Manhattan, but then have Manhattan at least 3 hours from anything else. And so after a while, it can get a little constrained, and you look for other avenues. By the way, though, before jumping ship from academia to Pittsburgh and to SAE, I filled in a friend's sabbatical at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio. So, in a way, my jump from academe to writing for SAE was a two-step process. I came back to the mainland first and then went to Pittsburgh.
So you landed at Road & Track in
1979. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You began your publishing career as the engineering editor?
Yeah. In fact, actually, when I was at SAE, I was already doing publishing. I was already involved with, I was learning my journalistic trade.
Okay.
I was an associate engineering editor of the SAE Monthly magazine. It's called Automotive Engineering. So that's really where I started learning my craft. And I also started kind of rubbing elbows with the road and track people and other automotive journalists in various SAE settings, as well as press trips and things of that sort. So I was already starting to do journalism before I came to Road and Track. I was there on the magazine for 3 years, I guess it was, at SAE. And then they up and promoted me to a management position. And I didn't like that as much as writing. So when the Road and Track offer came by, as I tell people, I've clawed my way to the side back in 1979. And I've been there ever since. I have the same title. There was a brief time when I had another title, but I've been engineering editor all these years.
So Road and Track stole you from SAE.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
But you were ready to go.
I was ready to go, yeah. I was ready to go. I enjoyed SAE very much. I made lots of good friends there. I'm still very involved with SAE. It's a marvelous organization communicating technical stuff. And that's what I do for a living, is communicating technical stuff. It was a really good training and a really good opportunity to get into the business. But then again, so is Road and Track. Road and Track is a wonderful opportunity to have the special interest of automobiles and make a living while you're doing it.
Has your role changed since 1979? And further, how's the magazine changed?
Yes and yes. Let's see. One way the role has changed is in the old days, the engineering editor did the track testing as well as the writing of technical articles and such. Now we have Jonathan L. Fallon, who is our road test editor, and Calvin Kim, our assistant road test editor. Back in those days, I would go out with the test car, and then one of the other staff members would come out and time the slalom for me or time the skid pad and drop off another car, and he'd take the first car back. But I would be out there on the track pretty much on my own. There's another neat story to be told about it. This was, again, let's see, late 70s. And actually, before I even came with the magazine, in the mid-70s, Road and Track, I believe, was the first auto magazine, possibly in the world, to use digital test equipment.
Wow.
The equipment prior to that, they had lots of equipment, but most of it was analog. A lot of it was just purely manual with somebody punching a watch.
Sure, sure.
But John Dinkle, my mentor here at the magazine at the time, and the guy who hired me, John had worked out with a guy named Paul Lamar, who also had an interesting background, to develop this digital test equipment. And we had this black box, and it was indeed a black box, really big. It was, 12 by 12 by 2 inches thick. And it operated off a separate battery. And you had to, it was long before the days of disks keeping track of storage, you had to reload the test program you wanted off a little tape recorder. When I wanted to do acceleration, load the acceleration program.
A cassette recorder.
Off a cassette recorder.
Okay, sure.
And if you listen, it was a beep, 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 you know, it was a digital signal going in. But then after you're done running the acceleration tests to do the brake testing, you had to reload the brake program. And because everything was fragile as can be, you had to have the car's air conditioning going, because otherwise the heat would fry the computer and you'd get halfway through and it would not work. It was quite an adventure, but yet we were at the very, very frontier of digital computing and digital equipment. Now our guys, of course, it's all GPS-based and it's highly automated. No more... accurate, I think, than what we were doing. And it probably is more accurate, come to think of it. But, I mean, our stuff was quite accurate. It was just that it was very delicate and very sensitive and very, very state-of-the-art. It was frontier. It was cool stuff.
Yeah, it must not have seemed at all cumbersome at the time.
No, that we had it at all. I mean, first of all, it meant that we didn't need two people in the car.
Right.
In the old days of Road and Track, before I was there, the driver would have another guy sitting next to him and punching stopwatches. And first of all, that second guy had a really interesting job that I certainly wouldn't like. Secondly, of course, it had all the disadvantages of the inaccuracy of punching stopwatches.
Sure.
But sure. then we went to the fifth wheel, and the fifth wheel with the digital equipment was the big jump.
Huge jump.
Yeah, it was cool. It was neat.
Now, you call it track testing, did you really go to a track?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they still do today.
Okay.
That is to say, we will have a test car at the office for, a week to 10 days, during which time each of us in the magazine will be driving it overnight and driving it during the day and writing comments about it to share with whomever among us is going to write the article. And then for one of the days in the time it's there, Calvin and Jonathan will take it down to, we test, about 20 minutes away at what used to be at one time a Marine Air Base that has been decommissioned.
Okay.
And that has a huge, huge runway.
So you're on the tarmac.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where we do all the testing. There are other places we do it, but that's our primary test site. And that's where the actual performance testing goes, the 0 to 60, quarter mile, brake testing, the slalom, the skid pad, the sound measurement, everything else. It's done at the test track as opposed to on the highway because these days especially, cars are immensely powerful, have immensely
sure.
high performance.
Yep, absolutely.
And while you can occasionally find a place to exercise it on the highway, probably not wise to exercise it to its fullest, some of these cars to their fullest extent.
Be sure to check out the rest of our interview with Dennis at www.euroautotraining.com.